This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Benchmark Maps. When I travel down new backroads, there's always an element of surprise involved. From where to see the best vistas to how to find camping. Which is why when it comes to directions and road conditions, I like to go in with as much reliable information as possible. Benchmark Maps has been field checking their atlases for accuracy for over 23 years. They drive thousands of miles in each western state to assess road conditions and build the most comprehensive database of recreation points of interest possible. So when you start down a dirt road, you'll know someone from Benchmark Maps has already driven it themselves. And with so many other surprises in traveling, that's something I appreciate relying on. Learn more at www.benchmarkmaps.com and use coupon code SHEEXPLORES for 20% off your order.
This episode of She Explores is also brought to you by Sawyer, an American outdoor gear company with a mission. They're sending their Sawyer Squeeze water filters to 80 countries around the world in order to improve lives with clean water. It's something a lot of us take for granted until we're out of water on the trail and need to connect with our water sources. To donate a filter, text Sawyer to 41444. Regular text message fees apply. And if you'd like to enter to win a Sawyer gift pack to keep you hydrated and protected in the outdoors, head to she-explores.com/Sawyer or the link in our show notes to enter. Sawyer uses the best technology to keep you going regardless of your journey. Learn more at www.sawyer.com. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
When I tell people that I go hiking and camping by myself, they are often surprised. They think it might be unsafe or too difficult to do on my own. But mostly they think it's brave to spend so much time by myself. Being alone with yourself is not something we do a lot. But many people think that that's the scariest part of what I do.
Almost 2 years ago, She Explores put out an episode called Alone on the Trail. It was just episode 8 of this podcast. And it's filled with voices of women exploring the benefits of spending time outside on the trail by themselves. Enough time has passed that I wanted to check in with you, the listeners, to hear your thoughts and stories of time spent outside solo. Last week, I asked for submissions, and I received more than I can include here, enough that I may put together another compilation later this summer. I chose not to put constraints on this episode. I think the women's stories tell themselves, but I also think it's worth contemplating what scares us and what excites us about stepping out on our own, whether it's into a kayak, onto a bicycle, or onto the trail. Or maybe it's even just going to a movie theater on a hot July evening, popcorn between your knees, the night yours and yours alone. The first voices you'll hear touch on the why.
My name is Natalie, and I'm in the middle of a long-distance, solo, self-supported bicycle tour from Anacortes, Washington to Bar Harbor, Maine. As I record this, I'm sitting in a campground in eastern North Dakota, and I've been on the road for a little over a month. One of the reasons why I wanted to do something like this was to find out, like, what do I think about when I have nothing to think about, when I have miles of open road ahead of me, who do I miss? Where does my mind go to? Where do I imagine myself being? What do I imagine myself doing? The time alone, no distractions, just to really think about these things, get at the core of what I care about has been really important and really valuable to me.
Unless you live completely remote, the majority of U.S. society is fast-paced, noisy, busy.
This is Christine Turner.
But when I'm alone on a hiking trail, I finally have the space and quiet I need to exhale and think. The sounds of the city fade away and are replaced by the sounds that have always been there. Birds, water, trees in the wind, bugs, and then my own footsteps, my heartbeat.
Working as a medic in disaster relief, I'm no stranger to embracing some fear and uncertainty and traveling solo. Then I got married, had a kid, and started medical school.
This is Jody, and all of a sudden she found herself without as much alone time.
Working at the hospital, every day I listen to people talk about coming to grip with the realization that their opportunity to hike, run, and explore in the outdoors was suddenly ripped away. They ask me about the last time I got out. I tell them about taking my son into the wild. We roam around together and he rides on my back when his tiny legs get too tired. I show him the trails that I love. We wander around beaches where the forest meets the sea. But sometimes I crave that solitude that I used to know so well. I miss knowing that I'm by myself and that I can make it on my own. So a few months ago, I decided to go for it. I packed my sleeping bag and tent and planned a short overnight hike, solo. The truth is that medical school can be a pressure cooker, and balance is elusive. Sometimes it's easy to feel like there's both too much and not enough all at once. Too much stress, not enough time, too much work or pressure or things to learn, that I'm not smart enough, not pretty enough, not competitive enough, not whatever enough. But out in the wild, it's all clear. It's just me, and I am enough. And when I was out there walking in the dark, listening to the silence and the sound of my boots hitting the trail with every step, I just thought, thank you. Thank you to my legs, my lungs, my heart beating loud in my chest. I go because I can, because some people can't.
These next two women don't know each other, but they sense such complementary stories that I decided to weave them together. First, you'll hear Jessie Johnson, and then you'll hear Beth Bradley. Their whys have a lot to do with acceptance and ownership.
I hike solo for the views and the challenge and the photos. And I also hike because a trail gives me the permission, the silence, and time to quiet the fallacies we are told about our bodies being wrong.
So ever since I was a little kid, I knew I was too fat. I remember being in third grade and having to do pull-ups in front of the whole class and just being terrified of that feeling of everybody's eyes on me and judging me. And that feeling just followed me up through being an adult. It would get in the way of me trying new things, and it just kind of became the story that I believed about my life.
We live in a time and culture that shames women into disowning our bodies, a culture that has normalized starving ourselves and packaged exercise as a means of undoing what we just allowed ourselves to eat. We preach it to each other under the disguise of love and health. We are sold the message that if our thighs take up space, if our bellies are soft, if our booties are small, that we are unworthy of love, of belonging, of worth. We have been convinced that the heartbreak we feel in quiet moments will go away if we can just be a little better.
But for some reason last summer, it just got to be too much and I just got fed up with it. And I started to think, like, what can I do right now to change it? And the first thing I thought of doing was to do a hike by myself. I had been going for a walk every day, and it kind of felt like the right direction. And I just thought, well, like, hiking's kind of just extreme walking, so maybe I can do it.
I hike in silence to distance myself from these messages. I go solo because carrying these messages without rebuttal doesn't feel like the life I want.
Right away, I was just trying to talk myself out of it. I was thinking, like, I don't have the right stuff. I don't have anyone to go with. And I had a real fear of, like, the real hikers on the trail seeing me struggling and knowing that it was because I was too fat. But despite all of that, I just knew it was just scary enough to me that I had to try it. So I got to the trail the next morning. I had found this 5-mile loop not too far from where I live, and I didn't really have any real gear. I had some generic $20 athletic shoes. I had an old Sprite bottle that I was using as a water bottle, but I got started, and right away there's all these like confident people striding by me, and I'm just letting them all pass by, and I felt terrible. Like I felt like I couldn't go on. I couldn't breathe. But I just kept looking ahead at the trail, and I just kept trying to get to that next spot. I'd just be like, I'm just going to try to get to there. And then I would do that again, And eventually I had gotten pretty far. I looked back and like my car was just a tiny dot in the parking lot. And the other thing I realized is that instead of listening to that voice the whole time telling me it was too fat, it was like that voice was quiet. Like I was listening to the wind, I was listening to the birds, my own breathing. And for once, that narrative was gone from my mind.
As I tick off the miles, I listen to my heartbeat faster and my breath become heavy. As the elevation increases, I feel closer to the truth. I become grateful for what my body allows me to do. That even with all the times I've turned away from it, restricted it, rejected it, it is still with me. Up on a mountain, above the trees, strong and steady. Being alone allows me to calm myself enough to be grateful. It allows me to remember that my body, that our bodies, are instruments we use to connect with and experience life and joy and pleasure. They are not ornaments for appraisal and comparison. When I hike alone, with each step, I can forgive myself for believing those lies. I can apologize to my thighs for hating them for so long and remember that all the time that we spend criticizing ourselves for not being perfect, we are missing the perfection of life.
So hiking solo has changed my life and I've kept it up and I go almost every weekend. And at first I really was afraid and I was scared of people seeing me huffing and puffing up the hill. But the more that I think about it and the more that I do it, I just think about who do we think should be on these trails and doing these active things. And instead of worrying about whether they see me, I really just hope that they do.
Thank you to Jesse and Beth for sharing these beautiful submissions. If you're interested in hearing them as standalone pieces, I've included them on the landing page via she-explorers.com. For many, going solo isn't a choice. Maybe you don't have a community or the timing is just never right. Sunny Strawyer sent us a message about why her trips don't always lend themselves to other people.
When I first graduated from college, I was scared to do things by myself. It's not even so much that I was scared of being alone, but I think I was afraid of the connotations that doing things solo carried. As in, why are you out there by yourself? Isn't there anybody who wants to do this with you? Do you not have friends? Are you not liked? Why are you going off solo? I've been traveling for a long time, for 6 months, and that trip was a solo trip which changed my outlook on being out there by myself. This happened when I was in my early 20s, you know, 23, 24. And ever since then, in the last decade, I've gotten more and more used to going off and doing things by myself. Not necessarily because I think that going solo is better than sharing experiences with friends, but because oftentimes the projects that I target are so large that it's difficult for other people to get excited to come along. The most recent example of a project like that would be when I set out to thru-hike the entire length of the Heyduk Trail this past April, just a couple months ago. The Heyduk is an 812-mile backcountry route that traverses the Colorado Plateau. It goes from the north side of Arches National Park all through the southern part of Utah, dips down into the Grand Canyon, and then comes back up to finish in Zion. And I had wanted to thru-hike the Heyduk for quite a while, but I knew that it was going to be a massive project with really, really big mileage days, very hard work, very difficult from a physical perspective, and I was going to be out there for over a month. So to me, going solo is just something that, yes, I do enjoy. I enjoy being out, having time to myself, to think, to be fully in the moment, to truly appreciate. But in a way, it's also a necessity born by the nature of the projects that entice me. Because if I have ideas and dreams and plans that are huge and difficult to execute from a logistics perspective, from a timing perspective, from a preparation and training perspective, you know, I would much rather go off and get after them and do them solo than end up not doing them at all because I'm lacking a partner who's able to commit the same amount of time and effort and preparation. That doesn't mean that I necessarily prefer doing things solo, but I do think that feeling comfortable with being out there solo is a massive enabler in helping make big projects possible.
Sunny's solo endeavors are nothing short of impressive. She set the women's fastest known time for Nepal's 136-mile Annapurna circuit in Nepal. I can't resist sharing links to a couple of articles about her in the show notes and via she-explores.com. We'll hear more stories after this. This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Ritual, the brand that's reinventing the experience of taking vitamins with 9 essential nutrients women lack the most. This morning, I actually renewed my first month subscription of Ritual, and I have to be honest, I didn't think that I would. I'm a bit of a skeptic when it comes to supplements and vitamins, but it was great to know I was filling gaps in my nutrition, including omega-3s. My stomach never got upset, and I love that I can read about each ingredient on ritual.com. With the ability to pause or cancel my subscription at any time, I'm interested to see how continuing the ritual will lead to more positive health choices. Forget everything you thought you knew about vitamins. Ritual is the brand that's reinventing the experience with 9 essential nutrients women lack the most. If you're ready to invest in your health, go to ritual.com/explore. Your future self will thank you for taking Ritual. It's kind of like a lifelong 401k. Why put anything but clean ingredients backed by real science in your body? Go to ritual.com/explore. This episode of She Explores is also sponsored by World Nomads, the global travel lifestyle and insurance brand for independent adventure travelers. Whether you're 100 miles from home or the other side of the world, Colorado or Cambodia, Oregon or Oman, World Nomads covers over 150 of the activities you love while enjoying the great outdoors. The greatest thing about them is their passion for supporting travelers who want to get off the beaten path and explore their boundaries. Learn more by tuning into the World Nomads podcast. Hear about great destinations and the amazing nomads who continue to explore those places. Like Elena Valeriot, the Californian woman who went in search of her family's Italian roots and found a sandwich so good it made her cry. The World Nomads podcast. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Or go to worldnomads.com/podcasts.
Hi, my name is Ashley Franklin. I am a 28-year-old living in Anchorage, Alaska. It's my second year living here, and I'm a resident physician, so that means I spend most of my time in the hospital, and having time off is a really rare occurrence.
We're back. Ashley hikes a lot solo, but she's yet to do an overnight.
I wish I could say that I'm calling to tell you that yesterday I did my first solo overnight trip, and this is not that story. Yesterday, I decided to hike to a public use cabin in the Talkeetna Mountains. It's one of 3 huts along a route that takes you over 2 mountain passes through 3 glaciers. My goal in Alaska is to complete the traverse, and so far I've made it twice to one of the huts. The trail's easy to lose, and so I decided to do, unfortunately, a new trail, but the easier of the 3 because it meanders slowly uphill a river before a steep climb at the end. I made it to the end of the valley and up the climb, and then the trail completely disappeared. Based on my GPS coordinates, I was less than a quarter mile away, and I did diagonals out from my spot of getting lost to try and find the hut, and could not. I got really tired, and I just didn't have the energy to continue climbing the last bit. And every time I looked up at the rock face, I started to doubt that the hut was actually even there. Which is ridiculous because I had already seen hikers earlier in the day returning from there. I sat on the cushy tundra and looked down the valley where I hiked and just felt incredibly disappointed. I could either sleep on the tundra, totally epic views, in my emergency bivy, or try to make it back to the car before nightfall. And I decided to go back. And it sucked. About 3 miles from the trailhead, I ran into 3 fresh-faced hikers. They asked if I slept over in the hut. And instead of bursting into tears, I somehow replied casually, "Nah, just an out and back." I was way too embarrassed in the moment to admit I gave up looking for it when I got tired. And today, thinking through it rationally after a lot of sleep, I could have taken a break and just climbed the last bit with the same amount of energy I needed to hike back. And the truth is, I think, when faced with unknown terrain and fatigue, I was really scared and mentally unprepared to sleep in a bivy. Yesterday's hike taught me 4 things. First, don't forget to eat a snack, because I totally bonked and realized today that I never ate along that hike out. 2, I definitely need more practice route finding, and I'd recommend route finding to anyone going solo hiking, because yesterday I was mentally unprepared for getting lost. 3, it's okay to abandon a hike if you think you can't finish it safely. Your life and the ability to get back on the trail again, solo or with a friend, is way more important than any summit. And 4, this hike would have been a lot more fun if I had a buddy to cheer me up that last peak.
There are lots of lessons to be found through these experiences. Ashley was cautious, and she's better prepared for next time, whether it's alone or with that buddy.
I feel like I could talk about solo travel in the outdoors for hours. I could talk about how much I love it, the pros and cons, and the way it really differs from time spent with other people in the outdoors.
This is Julie Hotz, who I'm proud to call my good friend now. You might recognize her voice from episode 2 of this podcast. In part of it, she talked about bikepacking from Los Angeles to Glacier National Park by herself.
I am very introverted, so for me it is easy to spend time alone. I enjoy it. I like the time to reflect. I like the time to work through problems in my head. I like the peace, the silence. That being said, I feel that when I am physically alone doing activities in the outdoors by myself, I'm still not totally going at it alone. For instance, I feel very confident in my navigation skills, reading a map. But it's because my friend Emery took the time when I was first learning to backpack to show me how to navigate. He passed on those skills to me. And I would not have been able to start backpacking when I did if my parents hadn't let me live with them after grad school so I could save money. That's what allowed me to afford backpacking gear. And I think of the people who have encouraged me along the way. So even when I am physically alone, I never truly feel alone. You know, I know that somebody's waiting for me to check back in. Even if it's just a friend that I texted, be like, "Hey, you know, I'm going for a trail run. I'm going to text you when I get back into cell service."
And it wasn't until I was in Utah, sitting in the middle of the desert alone in my van at about 11 o'clock at night, when I called my mom crying, like, "Nope, nope, nope, this is all wrong. There's no people here. I'm so sad and scared."
Savannah Simmons Grover is on a solo road trip, but the solo part doesn't come as easily for her.
"I'm so sad and scared." And she, of course, made everything better, because that's what moms do, and she's amazing. And things have gotten better since then. But what I will say that I've learned in the weeks since then is that, you know, I don't like being alone in the way that this lifestyle encourages. I love being outside and enjoying the environment, but not alone. Like I've just grown up doing that with other people. So I spend my time outside now. You know, when I go to a national park, I scope out a family and I go try to spend my day with them. Or if I can't do that, like I go to the gas station and I talk to the woman about her life, because that's just the type of extrovert that I am. And that's not a bad thing. And that's taken me a while to accept. So I'll just say that if you are someone who's looking for an experience, like an independent experience like this, and you're trying to like face your fears like I was, just be really, really gentle with yourself.
Solo experiences can bring you face to face with your fears. Each person who chooses to hike the Camino de Santiago does it for a different reason. And what was your reason for hiking it?
My reason for hiking the Camino de Santiago is that I had a bad breakup with my boyfriend at the time, and I was in my early 40s, never been married, had no kids. And I really just needed to come to terms with the fact that there was a good chance that I never would be married or have kids, and that that would be okay. And I was going to live, you know, the best life possible.
Cyan Proctor's Wikipedia page describes her as an African-American explorer, scientist, STEM communicator, and aspiring astronaut. That's right, aspiring astronaut. She's been part of an on-Earth Mars simulation, and she might be going to one later this week. I talked with Cyan over Skype about her voice submission.
It was funny because it was my birthday, and we basically broke up the day after my birthday. And that evening, I pretty much just went online, and I'm like, I'm booking the Camino, and I just booked my flight in to Barcelona and my flight out of Lisbon. For 7 weeks, I said, I'm going to just go figure it out. And I did. And it was amazing.
Had you ever done a solo hike that was that long before?
I had never done a solo hike outside of just hiking in my local neighborhood, Phoenix Valley, by myself. Mm. I'd never traveled outside of the United States solo.
Wow.
Until I booked the Camino. I'd done a lot of traveling. I'd been to over probably 40 countries, but I'd always done work related or a tour or traveling with my best friends, never solo.
And did that experience help you come to, like, did it achieve like the kind of goal that you set out, like to help you come to terms with the age?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It did. The Camino was one of the best things that I've ever done. It was funny because it was this solo journey, but I really realized that what I needed was to be more open and just be okay with myself. And it was really funny because I'd be walking along and people kept coming up to me and wanting to walk with me and share their stories with me. And it meant that I had to also open up and share myself. And in the process, I just learned so much about myself and the things that I wanted. And funny enough, after walking the Camino, I went home and I was doing my sabbatical back east. So I drove my car back east and met my future husband.
No.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I just got full body chills hearing that.
Yes. Literally. So I get out back from the Camino and literally like 2 months later, I've met my future husband.
Ah, so you were just open to that experience.
Yes, I was definitely open considering, you know, he lived across the country from me and we've been married for a couple of years now. But I mean, we weren't even living together when we first got married.
I asked Cyan whether she'd recommend the Camino de Santiago or a long hike like that to others.
Absolutely. I think everyone should have their own form of a Camino. You know, it's transitions or coming to terms with things, or there's so many reasons why. people go on a journey like that. And sometimes, you know, you just need a break. You need to just say, you know what? I just need to step away for a moment. And taking that time for yourself is, it's life-changing.
Cyan's wasn't the only story about that trail. Francesca Tarowski's experience also helped inform her intentions.
When I was very young, I used to go on holidays with my family to Wales, and we would do lots of hiking. We'd do cave explorations, we'd do rock climbing, and all of the adventurous stuff. But as I got older, I used to go on holidays with my family less, and I'd go on holidays with my friends more. And my friends weren't into that kind of stuff. We just didn't do it as much. We went to cities. We went to beaches. Then as I hit my 21st birthday, I was in my last year of university, and I started having seizures. So I had what are called tonic-clonic seizures, so the ones where you fall to the floor and you shake. And for a long time, I was having seizures quite erratically. Didn't have them on a regular basis, but they were quite debilitating when they happened. And that for a long time stopped me doing a lot of things. It stopped me doing things like going into the centre of London by myself. It stopped me doing a lot of things that you take for granted. Those seizures started getting quite bad. And in 2015, I was actually diagnosed with epilepsy. But that was one of the best things that could happen to me. They put me on medication called lamotrigine, and I take it every day. And since 2015, I haven't had any noticeable seizures at all. Last year, I took advantage of not having any seizures, and I decided to walk the Camino de Santiago in Spain. So it's a trail that has very, very different routes, and it is well walked by a lot of people. But I decided I needed to do it by myself. It was something that I wanted to do, and my boyfriend didn't. And it was something that gave me time to think about a lot of things. And it gave me time to reconnect with my body in a way that I just wouldn't be able to do doing sports inside or sports with other people. And this walk was 500 miles in the end, just over 500 miles for me. And it was a way to meet other people and talk to them about my diagnosis. It was a way to test myself physically and mentally. I hadn't had much chance to test myself physically for a while. I was quite unfit before I started the walk. But doing that walk and pushing myself to the limit and knowing that I can reach my limit and go beyond what I thought I could do, it made me realize how strong I am and how strong my body is. And it made me want to encourage other people with epilepsy and without to do the same thing and to push themselves, to test themselves to the limit.
Francesca is doing that through her website, seizeyouradventure.com.
When I listened to the Alone on the Trail episode originally, I thought, sure, I've hiked alone a bunch, but I don't have any interest in an overnight alone. And yet, something about the idea stuck with me.
This is Emily Saloff. She prefers backcountry canoeing to backpacking, and had become more and more comfortable doing it with her boyfriend. Last October, he couldn't make a trip, so she took that idea that was tucked into the back of her head and set off on her own.
The many bends and bays of Crooked Lake can make navigation confusing at best. And to top it off, I had a strong, steady headwind to paddle into almost the entire way to my chosen campsite, several miles away. Stepping onto shore at that campsite gave me the biggest feeling of relief. I'd found it, first of all, and gotten myself and all my gear to my destination, dry and in one piece, alone. Not a single person had helped me that day, and I had felt the weight of that responsibility the whole way. I'd been so scared. I was on the verge of shaking as I pulled my paddle hard through the white caps. I knew in my head that I had all the knowledge and abilities to get through that paddle, but actually doing it was an entirely different feeling. though I watched swans, otters, deer, loons, and other amazing wildlife, and sat under a remarkable fiery pink sunset, I found it hard to fully relax, and as I crawled into my sleeping bag, I questioned how the trip could be worth so much fear. Of course, in hindsight, the solo kayak camping trip was so worth it. All my morning camp routines that often get rushed by others, I was able to linger over. Coffee, yoga, journaling, a hike, all these things centered me, so I felt present and whole. Everything felt just a little easier the second day, and not just because the wind had calmed. I was able to enjoy the tamaracks reflecting their golden glow onto the lake, and freer from the stranglehold of anxiety, I navigated all the way back to the boat landing without needing to check my map once. On my next camping trip with my boyfriend, I was a better partner, more confident, more helpful. And though I haven't done another solo overnight again yet, I went back to the wilderness alone and moved through a whole new kind of fear, skiing on the frozen Crooked Lake. Doing outdoor activities alone distills the experience to its purest realities. Fear isn't tempered by companions, but every bit of good that you find in your time is yours to hold.
Kathy opened this episode, and I want to end on her words too. They felt like a call to action for me to do something that I haven't done by myself in too long. To lace up my boots and go.
To me, it always begins with the first step I take, that journey towards a clear mind. Walking to me is instant relaxation, especially if I do it by myself. It feels like suddenly all the weight is lifted from my shoulders, even when I have to carry everything I need to survive in a rucksack on my back. When I walk, I let go of my thoughts. All I can focus on is the beauty of the nature surrounding me, or the challenging pain that runs through my body with every step I take, depending on whether it's day one or day five. All the noise from the city is gone, and all I can hear is the wind rustling through the leaves above my head, or the birds whistling from the trees, or my shoes grinding on the little rocks beneath my steps. I watch the waves rolling in from the sea, and observe little insects flying from flower to flower. I sit still to watch a toad cross the path and a squirrel run up the tree. Walking is not just a literal way of slowing down my movements, it's a way to slow down my mind as well. And when my mind is slow enough, it suddenly pays much more attention.
Thank you to Kathy Kamleitner, Natalie Izzo, Christine Turner, Jody Spangler, Jesse Johnson, Beth Bradley, Sunny Strawyer, Ashley Franklin, Julie Hotz, Savannah Simmons Grover, Cyan Proctor, Francesca Tarowski, and Emily Saloff. Thank you to our sponsors, Benchmark Maps, Sawyer, World Nomads, and Ritual. Links are located in our show notes and the episode landing page. And if you enjoy She Explorers, you'll probably enjoy our sister podcast, Women on the Road. Hosted by Laura Hughes, it's filled with stories of honest experiences of life on the road from the women who've lived it firsthand. Just last week, Laura did one of my favorite interviews with Laura Austin, and it's all about solo travel, so it's pretty related to this episode too. And if you enjoy listening to She Explores, please take the time to review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It'll help other people find us. Even better, share She Explores with a friend. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, so make sure to tag us so we'll see it. Until next week, catch up with us in our She Explores podcast Facebook group. There we talk about recent episodes, give each other advice, and share resources and more stories about our time in the outdoors. Music is by Lee Rosevere, Jason Shaw, and Smaller Tide via the Free Music Archive. Music is also by Fort Vine. Until next week, have fun out there.